Today's opening tip, yes, dedicated to the Dodgers winning their first World Series title since 1988, beating the Rays 4-2.
It's just a piece of metal. What is everybody all excited about?
Says the man who wears a ring around his finger. This is the second major professional sports title for the city of LA in less than a month after the Lakers broke their 10-year title drought. I don't know if you guys have heard 1,000 people mention this, but the last time the Dodgers won the title, the Lakers also won the title. LA is happy. Richard, which title do you think means more to the residents of LA, Dodgers or Lakers?
Look, there's one thing. If you take away, obviously, the tragic situation of Kobe Bryant and all the people that passed, I would say the Dodgers. But because of that, the Lakers, just because of that connection.
What do you got, Nick?
It's got to be the Lakers. It's got to be for Kobe. This was the year they did it for him, and they made it happen.
They certainly talked about it, and then they walked it, right, after that. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined here in our L.A. studio with, yes, the man with just a piece of metal, NBA champ Richard Jefferson. He spent six weeks with me inside of the bubble covering the postseason, and he came back for more, which is unexplainable. We are also joined by our ESPN NBA insider, Nick Friedell, who is joining us from his hometown of Orlando. Coming up, we're going to catch up with the Warriors, who they are coming off of their gap year after making 5 straight finals appearances. Nick spent all of last season covering Golden State, and he will tell us exactly what to expect next season from Steph, Klay, and Draymond. But first, got a little breaking news here for you. This Philadelphia 76ers, according to our Adrian Wojnarowski, are in advanced talks on a deal to hire former Rockets GM Daryl Morey to oversee the franchise's basketball operations. A deal is expected to be finalized in the next few days. Morey, of course, resigned from the same position in Houston earlier this month after spending 13 years with the Rockets.
He wanted to spend more time with his family.
His record certainly speaks for himself. And we now welcome in Woj to The Jump. Thank you, Woj, so much for joining us. Look, I know. Richard is already sitting here in the studio with the whole speak of he wanted to spend more time with his family, which is what we heard just a couple weeks ago. So how did these conversations between Daryl and Sixers ownership start? Because they did go after him a couple years ago, right?
Richard, they did go after him a couple years ago, and he really essentially leveraged it into a new contract in Houston. That was a time when Philadelphia talked to a few top executives around the league, but things were very different this time. He worked out his exit with the Rockets, and almost immediately, in fact, started to talk with the Sixers. These conversations have been ongoing for a few weeks. I'm told Daryl Morey's in Philadelphia now, met with ownership. I know he's talked with Doc Rivers, the coach. They have history together going back to their time in Boston. And Daryl Morey talked to Doc Rivers about coming to the Rockets before he left there. So that deal is being finalized now. There's essentially an agreement in principle. They're just working through the language in the contract. But they're going to have a formal announcement, I'm told, here in the next couple days. And Daryl Morey will take over as the president of basketball operations with the Sixers.
So what would the hiring of him as president impact the GM, Elton Brand?
Well, right now I'm told that the plan is for Elton Brand to stay and continue as GM. Obviously, he'll be second on their, on their org chart. But listen, I think there'll be some conversations between Daryl Morey and Elton Brand and see how they might work together. I know Doc Rivers and I know ownership there feel very strongly about Elton Brand. I think there's an expectation now he will stay, but listen, Elton Brand went from being the decision maker to not being the decision maker now, and that's probably something I think he's going to think through. I know he's going to talk with Daryl in the organization, but the expectation is that Morey wants him to stay. Doc Rivers wants him there, ownership, and so that's I think a conversation that'll be ongoing here as Morey gets settled in.
Such an interesting story. So many layers. Of course, the Sixers let go Sam Hinkie years ago. Sam Hinkie had Daryl Morey as a member. Everything comes back around in this league. Before you go, Woj, I want to catch up with you on the negotiations going on this week between the players' union and the league. There is a deadline this Friday about coming to an agreement on, frankly, so many things. Are they going to be able to get it done by them? What do you expect?
Right now, I don't get a sense that they can come to terms on all the items they need to by Friday, Rachel, and we've reported this a few times. They pushed this date back. Essentially, the league still holds the right to terminate the collective bargaining agreement. Actually, the players could do the same because of the pandemic. There's been no indication that that's something the league or certainly not the players want to do. They want to make some adjustments to the current CBA, largely in terms of the salary cap, because they've lost so much revenue and they expect to lose so much more revenue this season. But the league really wants to start before Christmas. Financially, they've showed the players how significant the difference is between starting then. And that also allows them to finish sooner and get next season back on track with a normal schedule. And to finish by the Olympics, they've got to do a 72-game regular season. So those talks are ongoing. I expect them, though, to probably extend beyond this week, Rachel.
Really interesting. Well, we'll be looking for your reporting on that and everything else this week. Thank you so much for the news on Daryl Morey. We will see you soon. Thanks for joining us.
See you guys.
All right, do you want to bring Richard and Nick back into the conversation about the Sixers now? As we look at their roster, Richard, how would these pieces fit with what we have seen Daryl Morey do in Houston and sort of the approach he has become famous for? I don't see a lot of three-point shooting on this roster.
Well, look, you have to be able to adjust. At the end of the day, he was very, very close, but he didn't really achieve what they were trying to accomplish. I look at this roster and, you know, look, it's very weird right now. He didn't necessarily hire Doc Rivers, and you don't – obviously they have a relationship, but then you have him now stepping over top of Elton Brand. So anything that Elton Brand told to Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid is like, no, we're going to keep you and we're going to build around you. Like, everything is just kind of up in the air. So this is a very much so a wait-and-see situation.
Rach, at this point, if you're the Sixers, you have got to let Daryl Morey work. The first thing I'm doing, if I'm him, is I'm looking at these spreadsheets and I'm going, Elton, you really spent that much on Tobias Harris and Al Horford? What the hell are we going to do with those contracts? We got to get those off, and you've got to find some way to create more flexibility than you've got right now. You have to decide if Embiid and Simmons are the guys that you want to build around. And if not, Morey's reputation through the years has been finding a way to land stars and bring in pieces out of seemingly nothing. This is the guy other GMs turn to and they say, well, he made it happen, so why can't you guys make it happen? So you would think that he will be creative like he has the whole time in Houston, and he'll find a way to reshape the roster, the one we're looking at right now.
I think creativity is such an important word there, because there's this idea that Daryl is so rigid, right, that he has to have a team that plays a certain way. He certainly has a philosophy on the smartest way to play basketball, the whole math equation, the whole thing, but he has shown over and over again an ability to look at what he has and try to figure out a new and different way to make things work, especially when it comes to deal making. And Nick, you're right. The Sixers have gotten themselves in quite a pickle here in the idea of what draft picks they owe where, what kind of salary they have on the roster. They need someone who is able to be a really good deal maker, someone who can leverage different ideas. And frankly, the Sixers, as we've been saying, Richard, all season, could use more three-point shooting and more shooting around them. We've seen the roster slowly lose shooting over the last two seasons. Do you think that if Daryl injects a little bit more of a shooter's mentality into roster construction, it will help Embiid and Simmons play together?
Well, I think it will, but ultimately, which you're right. One thing that I know about the Houston Rockets, just from people that have been in the organization, is that he's thinking things 3 to 5 years in advance. He's looking at where teams are, where they might be vulnerable. That's why so many people look at what he's able to do and how he's able to accumulate draft picks. I would also look at Danny Ainge and what he's able to do. So when you start to look at, you know, what he's going to do in Philly, yes. I would say Tobias Harris to the Knicks. They want to take on bad contracts. And so I think there's so many opportunities now that he's like, okay, look, we might have to take one or two steps back to ultimately build towards what we see and what we want to do in the next 3 to 5 years.
No question. And Nick, we know that he had an almost record number, right, of deals over his tenure in Houston. So I expect a lot of deal making to ensue this offseason right away, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, this is why he's there, Rach. They brought him in to make this roster work. And if it's not going to work now, he's going to find a way in the next couple of years to do it. The thing that would scare me for the rest of the league, you put Daryl Morey, Doc Rivers and potentially Elton Brand in a room when guys are coming in as free agents and they're hearing that pitch in Philly with those guys and their track record, that is something I think is really going to work in Philly's favor in the years to come.
Yeah, don't forget that when you combine all of them, there's a total of one championship. So that's going to speak so, so loudly.
You're trolling, Richard, is really.
I just Richard,
want to
come on.
Now. Okay.
They've won a lot of games.
Look, Daryl Morey, I love Doc. Come on, I'm just saying. It's like, hey, everybody, we can make it to a conference finals. Hopefully,
man,
we don't blow a 3-1 lead.
They're lucky you're not in the room. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Utah Jazz. They are making an ownership change after 35 years under the helm of the Miller family. Is that something, nothing, or everything? We will discuss that. Now we're back for a round of one of our favorite games here on The Jump. It's something, nothing, or everything time. Shout out Kevin Wilds. First up, according to Woj, the Miller family has entered into an agreement to sell the Utah Jazz and the arena to Qualtrics founder Ryan Smith for $1.66, wait for it, billion,
with a B,
billion dollars. Richard knows the Miller family has owned the Jazz for 35 years. Nick, is this something, nothing, or everything?
It's something because, Rach, everybody's used to Utah doing things a certain way with that organization. Maybe a new ownership comes in, they want to spend even more money. When you spend $1.6 billion for a team, you better be willing to spend a lot more checks than that moving forward.
Yeah, no, I think this is something. One, you know, the Millers, I played for this team for 82 quick games. And when I say it is a family organization, there are people that have been in the organization for years. So there's going to be a shift. Secondly, the thing I want to say is that if you're spending $1.6 billion on one of the smallest markets in the entire NBA, trust me, the NBA is doing just fine.
That is a great point. Right when the Clippers went for $2 billion, everybody said, oh, it's because it's an LA team. They come available so infrequently. Well, this is $1.6 billion. And the man who just bought the team, Richard, he's 40 years old. So I just want to know what you've been
doing.
I just want to know what you've been doing with your life.
I have nothing, obviously.
Just saying. I want to get to one of Nick's favorites, Stan Van Gundy. He raved about Zion Williamson's playmaking ability in his introductory press conference as Pelicans head coach yesterday. Here is what he said when asked about what position Zion will play. Take a listen.
You have a vision for what he is, which is a multi-talented guy. I mean, he is an unbelievable playmaker for a guy at his size. He's a guy who can take the ball off the glass and lead the break and make plays. He can make passes off of the dribble. He can finish over bigger people inside. I mean, he's a multi-talented guy. I don't look at him in any way as far as is he a 4 or 5. As time goes on, I'm going to find out that he can do even more than I think he can do, and things will evolve from there.
Even more than he thinks he can do. Richard, is Van Gundy saying that Zion is not limited to a position, something, nothing, or everything?
I think it's nothing, in my opinion, because we've talked about positionless basketball for like the last 5 years. Players are just trending everywhere. It's like Draymond Green is the defensive player of the year, and he plays the 5 position, and he's 6'5". You've seen what the Houston Rockets did. At the end of the day, Zion Williamson is an athletic freak. He has the physical size of a huge 4-man, probably more of a defensive lineman, but he can shoot the ball. We've seen it improve that. We've seen his skill because he's only 6'5", so he has skill. So there's like, who cares? Cares about what position he is. They just need him on the court for about 70 plus games. Then you have something.
Right. This is absolutely nothing. Zero. This is exactly what Stan's supposed to say. I mean, Stan's whole tenure in New Orleans is going to be defined on how well he gets Zion to play year after year and how many wins Zion can lead the team to. So Stan has to say all this. I'm sure he believes it or he wouldn't have taken the job, but this is absolutely nothing. Zion has to develop under Stan's watch, and if he does, they're all going to be set.
Well, there are going to be so many eyes, right, on the relationship between those two. Stan's hiring. He's got so many strengths. There have been people who are wondering how he's going to relate to someone who last year was the youngest player in the league. And he absolutely thinks that he has a path to make him and Zion like this. So we will find out if that's actually going to happen. All right, let's move on to the Knicks, because according to our former colleague, now SNY's Ian Begley, several teams have reported the Knicks are open to taking on some undesirable contracts in trades. The idea, of course, is to acquire draft picks, young talent in exchange for doing so. Nick, is this something, nothing, or everything?
This is nothing. Isn't this ingrained in the Knicks' DNA to get bad contracts and get players who are past their prime?
I mean, my man. This time it would be on purpose.
Rach, look, my man Tibbs is not going there to lose. I know that. So he is going to get any veteran guy who he thinks he can still get to play at a high level and get them to win games. But this is nothing. The Knicks are where bad contracts go to die. Anybody who's got a bad contract on their books is going to call them up and say, hey, Tibbs will take them. Just give us some money. So I am not surprised at all. I just don't think the Knicks are going to be as atrocious as the rest of the world does, because I know Tom Thibodeau, and he's going to do everything he possibly can to prove all the people who are doubting him wrong.
That's certainly true.
So I agree with you because it is the Knicks, but let's play a game called Hypothetically Things Are Going to Work Out. And so we're going to give an example, a pretty basic example. Basically, when the Nets got fleeced for all of their draft picks and they had no draft picks for multiple years and they had nothing, their team was dog, it was bad. What did they do? They took on Timothy Maggaz's contract in order to get, who did they get? D'Angelo Russell, who was the number two pick in the draft just 2 years prior. Lakers wanted to move on because they got Lonzo Ball. So you take on a bad contract, you get a good draft pick, and then he ends up developing and being an all-star. What did that all-star allow him to do? It allowed him to get the team to the postseason, which made the Nets an attractive free agent destination. So let's say that they followed the exact same thing. We know it's not because it's the Knicks, but ultimately this is their mindset and what they're thinking. So I'm going to say it's something.
I absolutely think it's something, because I think it is evidence of a plan. Richard, the model that you just described is absolutely what the Knicks should be doing this offseason. There's not a lot of teams this offseason that have cap room, so that's one. Second of all, the cap is going to be lower because of the less revenue coming in, even with them artificially inflating it somewhat. So that is going to even more make the fact that you have not a lot of teams being willing to take on these kinds of deals. If you are a team with a lot of cap room and a little bit of a tolerance, because maybe you've got a new coach and management that everyone understands this is a little bit of rebuilding, you can be the one that can take these contracts and get a pretty high price of a high pick attached, a player that you want.
Tobias Harris.
This is actual planning on the Knicks'
calling
part.
Calling Al Horford.
Is the difference between before, when a lot of times it was the Knicks offering the bad contract themselves, and then having to send it attached to, I don't know, Kristaps Porzingis in a trade or something like that to get picks back. I'm just saying, to clear room for a player who didn't come. Coming up on this date in 2009, Steph Curry made his NBA debut. Three titles, two MVPs later, we are going to revisit that moment. Nick Friedell, who covers the Warriors for ESPN, is also going to tell us what it would take to acquire the number two pick from the Warriors. Golden State's got an off pick for sale.
Uh-oh.
Ice cream, pick for sale.
That pick ain't going nowhere.
Welcome back to The Jump. Steph Curry making his debut 11 years ago today, and the time has flown by. Baby Steph in those videos, right?
Yeah.
Three titles.
That's it.
Three titles. Fellow Splash brother Klay Thompson also, so let's talk about them. They were sidelined most of last season due to injury, but they're still really, really, really good, and we'll be back and ready to go for this upcoming season. Nick Friedell, you are our Splash Brothers expert. Do you think they are still the best backcourt in the NBA?
Absolutely, Rich. I don't think in their mind there's any question, because I think people have flatly forgotten how good they can be together. It's been a year and a half since we saw them, since Klay got hurt in the finals. Steph barely played last season. I think those two are so incredibly motivated to show the rest of the world, hey, we're still here and we're still as dominant as ever, that I am really intrigued to see just how fast they start this season whenever it begins, because they know they're on a mission to prove to everybody else that they can still play at the highest level.
Yeah, so they are. They are the best backcourt, and they're going to be the best backcourt until they probably retire at this point in time. But this is the issue about the next season, the revenge tour, quote unquote. Steph is coming off injury, hasn't played really much basketball in the last year. Klay has missed an entire season of basketball. You have to condition yourself. I don't care. They're not even going to the mini camps. I know these guys are going to be in shape. I know these guys are going to be tough. I'm not saying that. But there is something about being 30 years old, missing an entire season of basketball. So I don't think next season is going to be their quote unquote revenge tour. It's going to be the following season when they kind of got their legs underneath them. They're kind of back into a little bit of a rhythm. That's when I think they can really start, you know, taking names and, you know, kicking you know what.
I think you're forgetting, though, that Klay Thompson is just a different kind of human. He's got that Wolverine stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Skin.
I don't dispute that they're going to be dominant, but they won't be their best version of themselves. But that's just my thought.
Just saying. Nick, do you think that anyone else on that list is going to be insulted if you guys both said them instead of
no? Who cares?
On that list?
Who cares? None of them by on that list wins a championship.
You KD were talking and Kyrie. To KD and Kyrie. I mean, Rach, I think we're talking about revenge tours and who's ready to show that they can still play at the highest level. I look at Steph and Klay, and I know them, and I know how much they want to prove. But I also know Kevin Durant. And I know that he thinks a lot of people have written him off already going into Brooklyn, like they can't still win a title potentially next year. So I am really looking forward to see how he plays and see how that list goes throughout the season as far as backcourts happen.
Well, certainly the fact that they haven't played since March, they're going to benefit from this early start if we do, in fact, the NBA does go at the end of December, as opposed to some of these teams that were in the bubble and that might be a little bit more mentally or physically checked out at the start of the season. So I'm with you. I'm expecting them to come out of the gate strong. Nick, what do you think they learned from last season when they finished with the worst record in the league?
Just how bad it is when they're like everybody else and they don't have future Hall of Famers to rely upon.
It's
Rach, the key to me in it's incredible how that happens. Yeah. The key to me, though, in talking to people in the organization, these guys are all paying attention to what everybody is saying. They have listened for a year and a half since the end of that finals against Toronto. They've listened to everybody say, it's over, it was a fun run. And Draymond was in and out, and he dealt with some injuries, but he wasn't the same because he wasn't playing with Steph and Klay. But this organization is proud. They're willing to spend a lot of money, and they want to continue the runway of being great. And if you have those kind of components with Hall of Fame shooters who are coming back, who know how many people are out there doubting them, that's why I think this year they can really make a difference. And we'll see what happens with that draft pick. We'll see what happens with Andrew Wiggins. But this is a proud, proud team. And you should never discount just how much a proud team has to prove when everybody's written them off.
Well, look, now let's also go back a minute. When people were saying they were done, it's like, look, we knew to start the season there was going to be no Klay Thompson. And Steph Curry was healthy to start the season. Draymond Green was healthy to start the season. They had D'Angelo Russell, and they were done. Because it wasn't so much just the injury, but it was also Kevin Durant, big brother, is not there anymore. So, yes, Golden State being 100% healthy starting the season, that's not the same Warrior team that everybody was saying is going to be done. This is a different team. You're healthy. Everyone's locked in. You have a top draft pick. So I think as much as they want to take names, whatever their motivation is, good for them. I love to see the Warriors on top. I love those battles, but they're just now back in the field. For the last 3 to 4 seasons, it was the Warriors and everyone else, very similar how it was LeBron James and everyone else in the two respective conferences. So now they're in the middle of the field, and they're going to have to fight to get out to get to the finals.
I mean, look, the Kevin Durant era of the Warriors not only is actually done because Kevin Durant is gone, but that overpowering, they are going to win no matter what. And the guys said it themselves. They acknowledged certainly in the last month or two of that final season altogether. Draymond said we'd have pull in on the bus to the arena, and I knew we would win the game because they were just so overwhelming that it literally took 2 major injuries for them not to win an NBA Finals. That era of absolute suffocating no matter what, unless huge cataclysmic injuries happen, dominance, that's done. Yeah. But that's not a slight on Steph or Klay. That is saying that, oh, they're in it now, and they are two of the most highly talented guys we have in this league. And the fact that they already are being slotted into the favorites clot, that group at the top for next
compliment.
Season, I think shows how much people really do still respect them. But I understand. You want to think everyone's against you because then, man, you can really show them. Yeah. They're also going to have possibly a new draft pick in the club next year. Bob Myers and the Warriors front office have options, though, in terms of trading that number two pick for veteran talent. They could keep it. They could draft someone that they think could help them win now. So, Richard, how much would entice the Warriors to trade the pick? What kind of offer do you think would be enough?
I think they need to get someone that they know can step in and play right away. I don't think they want a young, talented player, even if it's in the right position. I think the Golden State Warriors, I love the Wiseman pick because any other organization, he would be forced to kind of do a bunch, play 40 minutes a night, really develop. There, they're like, listen, we're going to develop you slowly because you're going to be contending for a championship. I want you to screen. I want you to roll. I want you to play defense. And I think that's a great organization for him to be in. Any other perimeter guy that they could possibly draft is going to take time in order for him to develop. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the Warriors trade this pick. If it was like we were talking about Bradley Beal and stuff like that, you got to get a player of a high level, like, ability, mainly because they're contending for a championship. So you're not out here just kind of picking up projects or guys with potential.
Richard, I agree with you completely. If the deal is there to be made, I've always thought that the Warriors were going to do it because they know that that runway is always shorter than everybody thinks it is, even when you have potential Hall of Famers in Steph and Clay and Draymond. They need a piece that is going to fit in right away. And if they had their choice in a dream world, I think they would make a deal. The name that keeps popping up when you talk to people is Kelly Oubre. Can they get him in? What would they have to give up? They have that exception, the trade exception for Andre Iguodala as well, that expires here in a little bit. But if you get a little bit of a veteran piece who can help now, I think for the Warriors and what they want to do, I think that would be a much better case scenario. I mean, Wiseman is a name who would fit. But a lot of these guys may fit. We just don't know that much about them still. And you got to be able to get a piece right away who you think can help you win another title. So in the end, if the deal is there, I think they make it. But who's to say the deal is going to be there because of all the uncertainty around the league?
Yeah, well, the idea of Tsunami Poppy and that Warriors environment is certainly enticing. The luxury tax bill would be extremely high if you made that deal.
Well, can't remember, take it with you.
That new arena is not making money for them right now. So that may be more of a factor for the Warriors than it would be in a more, quote, regular season. Richard, I also think it's adorable. You think that Bradley Beal could be traded for just the number two pick. But,
well, you know, you could throw in Clay or Steph also.
Yeah, totally. Sure they would do that. Here's what the Jump recommends for today. Not Richard's knowledge
just
on
kidding.
GMing, apparently.
Just kidding.
Go to the undefeated. Read Jerry Bembry's outstanding article on, yes, Bradley Beal and why he decided to vote for the first time in this election. It's really, really strong article. Here's a passage. Quote, as a basketball player, I just felt like I was removed as a citizen of the world and thought, we don't have a voice. We don't have an opinion. But the NBA and the MBPA are supporting us and giving us a voice to use our platforms to be able to speak out, be the voices of people who aren't heard and the people who are underserved. I've heard this from so many basketball players this year who have told me, you know what? I didn't even vote until recently, and now I see why it's so important.
Agreed.
Great piece. Please look at it in The Undefeated, and then stick with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Jump. Rachel Nichols hanging out with Richard Jefferson, Nick Friedell. Richard, you have trolled so far Rob Manfred in this show. You've trolled the Knicks. Who else have
Daryl
you trolled?
Morey.
Daryl Morey.
Yeah,
so there you go. I want to turn our attention back to the Royal Sixers for the moment. Because apparently Richard has more to say. Dodgers third baseman, as many of you know, Justin Turner, pulled from the game in the eighth inning last night after a positive COVID-19 test result. Turner was asked to go into isolation afterward, but he did come back onto the field to celebrate with his teammates, with his family. Dodgers president of baseball operations, Andrew Friedman, explained why Turner was allowed to come back after testing positive.
He wanted to come out and take a picture with the trophy, which, you know, can't state strongly enough how big of a role he's played in this, the success of this organization. But, you know, I think for him, just being a free agent, not knowing exactly how the future is going to play out, I don't think there was anyone that was going to stop him from going out. I think he was mindful of, you know, other people, especially other people that he hadn't already been in contact with. It's no one's fault. It's just how things played out. And, you know, we'll figure out exactly how to proceed going forward.
So, Richard, you and I just got back from the NBA bubble. We got tested every day. Now, we media could not see our family for the entire duration of our stay. The players did have their families in that second stint when you came in. And so, again, I mean, they're Justin Turner and his wife, there's been a big deal made about that. Obviously, they have been together for weeks. What can the NBA learn from what happened last night in Major League Baseball? Because there's a lot of layers to this.
NBA can learn absolutely nothing. At the end of the day, look, Justin Turner, I'm an LA Dodger fan. My thing is this. That was probably not the smartest move. And again, we're going to keep finding out more and more information, mainly from the standpoint of, like, he was told before, and they were trying to see if it was a false positive. So he had another test. So he knew he was positive before the game. My biggest issue with
this. So the reporting is that there was an inconclusive, and that information, Jeff Passan reported for ESPN, that information came in the second inning of the game that it was an inconclusive. And then midway in the game, and which is why they pulled him in the eighth inning, came back the information about a secondary test that was positive. Just to clarify the timeline, according to ESPN reporting.
So my thing is this. If you would have said any of the Los Angeles Lakers or any of the Miami Heat or any of these players that are playing for a championship, you were like, hey, there's a possibility that one of our guys, Justin Turner, ends up testing positive for COVID. So what should we do? And these guys are like, look, this is all hands on deck. We want to go out there and win. The only problem is it's not just their decision. They're playing against the Rays. They're playing against umpires. There's umpires out there on the field. So there are so many people. This is not just a Dodgers are we willing to risk. He's actually risking the health of other people on other teams that had no idea about it. That's my issue. Not that he came out with the trophy. These people know if they want to get distance, they know the situation. So they are actively choosing to be around him. Also, it's the people that were not aware, and that's the Rays, that's the umpires, that's the biggest issue here. If you want to be selfish with your group of individuals and they are condoning it, that's on you, that's on your family, that's cool. It's the people that don't know.
Rach, it makes the NBA look even better, honestly. I mean, to see Justin Turner and the optics that went into that last night and the decision that he made and the Dodgers made, it makes Adam Silver, Michelle Roberts, everybody involved in the NBA's bubble look great because they stuck a guy in quarantine and went to get Uber Eats when he was down at Disney.
For 10 days.
I mean, they wouldn't let anybody through anywhere. The security was extremely tight and everybody followed it and everybody came out healthy. If anybody besides Turner now comes out positive, doesn't feel great, it's not just on the Dodgers, it's on Major League Baseball because they didn't have the will to stop him in the moment like the NBA did time and again throughout the bubble.
Well, look, I certainly don't think if that situation had come up during the NBA Finals, we would have seen the NBA handle it the same way, just based on, as you guys both said, what they did for all of the protocols that we had to go through. And Nick, I know you were up in the yellow zone of the bubble as well, so we all encountered it in different ways. It's also a reminder why even, you know, I sat with Adam Silver for an interview, I think it was the third or fourth game of the NBA Finals, and we were saying, wow, this experiment has worked so well, and he said, not yet. Not yet. We don't know yet. And the NBA really had that attitude throughout the entire playoffs of, hey, it's not a success until it's a success, that it could happen at any time. Even apparently in the eighth inning of the final game of the World Series. It's going to be interesting now to look at what happened with baseball, though, and Justin Turner, which was operating in a bubble environment. And yet one of the key players on the team that won the World Series had a positive test result show up on the final day. So what is that going to mean going forward in terms of how you plan bubble-less seasons like the NBA is thinking about doing for the start of the 2021 season? Nick, what do you think a bubble-less NBA environment would look like if they don't go back to a bubble for the regular season, which at this point is what is on the table?
I think there's a lot of stress for everybody involved, Rach, because we saw when guys would take a little detour going out of the bubble, and that was just a couple guys on a couple different teams. What happens the first time some guy comes back and he does test positive and he has to miss 2 weeks. And then that sets up a whole misery with the schedule, especially if it's a star. I think the league has got to be really cautious. Nobody wants to do another bubble. But in the end, if they start having problems early on when they try without it, I think there's a scenario certainly where they say, hey, we know the bubble works. We know the bubble will get us paid with these TV deals. Maybe that's the safest route again once we take a look at all the options.
Hey, look, let me say this. If they don't pull Blake Snell, they're going to a game seven, okay? So if there's a game seven and you know that somebody else tested positive, that means that there's going to be multiple.
Oh, they would have had to delay.
Potentially.
They would have had to delay things.
They would have had to delay things. So, and again, to your point, even when we were in the bubble and we were getting down to the finals, I remember that they were nervous about after the championship, if the Lakers were to have won that championship that night, which they did, what are we going to do with the families? Are we going to let the owners come down from the yellow zone? And we were like, look, once that buzzer sounds, the bubble is done, right? Anybody can do anything that they want, go wherever you want,
anybody.
Do whatever you want.
That's not how it went.
Well, I'm not saying anybody, but I'm saying is that you can break the quote-unquote bubble. You can burst it because it is over. There is no more. If everyone gets COVID and the championship is done, the problem is someone tested positive before the series was finished. And so they didn't handle it right. Look, as long as, like, I don't want to say no harm, no foul, but yes, is the optics of this great? No, not at all. And even for Justin Turner, it's like, yo, I want you to celebrate. You've been doing this for a lot of years. You've been through a lot. I feel you. I want you to celebrate. My issue here is that when we look at the other team, did the other team, if they weren't made aware, if Major League Baseball knew this and kept this from the Rays, if they kept this from the umpires, that's where you have a bit of an issue. That's the part where it really becomes a problem.
Well, I felt bad knowing, just, you know, living in Los Angeles and knowing what an integral heart and soul that mm-hmm. Justin Turner is for this Dodgers team. I felt really bad when they initially sort of, you know, they had that initial pile up. You win the World Series. Justin Turner's not there. I felt bad for him having to miss it. I think, gosh, you know, they had an inconclusive the day before. This was a positive. You know, if it turned out to be a false positive, you'd feel so bad for him that he ended up missing it. Obviously, a false positive is better than a real positive because then you wouldn't have coronavirus. But then when he came out and celebrated, I was like, oh, this is actually the bigger problem. Him missing the celebration was a problem, but him actually being involved in it, bigger problem.
Rach, think about all those guys now that probably have to quarantine, that can't go celebrate with their families, that are being around.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. And I'm saying I don't know if there's a difference between being around Justin Turner from innings 1 through 7 means that you have to quarantine differently than the fact that he also came out for the trophy presentation. I don't know if there is a shift in that at all. But your point about the other team and certainly just the idea that once you do have a positive result, you need to act a certain way. And we've had modeling in this country from some key figures of people not doing it. And it is causing other people in the country to repeat their behavior and lives are being lost. I mean, that's just a scientific fact. So hopefully Justin Turner feels okay. He said he wasn't showing any symptoms. Hopefully the rest of the Dodgers, we wish them all good health.
Congratulations, JT.
On winning a title. Crunch time here on The Jump. The Dodgers are World Series champs. Magic Johnson, who is a part owner, was of course there to celebrate. So was Billie Jean King. Shout out, Billie.
Shout out, Billie Jean.
Magic already had an NCAA title, 5 NBA championships as a player, and he counts his LA championships as an owner as well. How does this World Series title impact his legacy?
Absolutely nothing. This does nothing for Magic Johnson other than it gives him another thing. Magic Johnson has it all, right? If Jeff Bezos makes another $1 billion, what does that do for Jeff Bezos' wealth? Nothing. He's got it all already.
Nick?
I just love that the game ended and I'm looking right back up at Magic smiling and his wife with the camera out waving at everybody. I mean, he is on top of the world. He set himself up for this. He's the king of LA.
Yeah.
Apparently it's good to be Magic Johnson. Who knew?
Yeah.
Chris Paul led a march to the polls on Tuesday to promote early voting. This was so cool. Nearly 2,500 people took part at Winston-Salem State and HBCU, of course. Chris Paul also enrolled as a student there right now. Nick, do you like seeing NBA players? Because they basically said, it's not over. Just because the bubble's over, it's not over. Do you like seeing them walk the walk after they've talked the talk?
Rach, this is fantastic. Shout out to Chris Paul because this is what it's all about for the league. You're backing up what the messaging you put down over the last few months. To see him out there is a great, great thing.
Yeah, no, this is huge. But we know this is Chris Paul. This is who he is. This is who he's always been. Just because he's getting attention now doesn't mean that he's changed who he is.
Absolutely true. All right, by now everyone has seen Kim Kardashian's private island photos from her quarantine 40th birthday, which was somehow a surprise, even though they quarantined. Anyway, Tristan Thompson was there. So was Devin Booker, considering the Suns went 8-0 during the NBA restart. Richard, which was better for Booker, the Disney bubble,
Disney,
or the Kardashian
Disney
bubble?
I'm sorry, I'm still waiting to prove that being in the Kardashian bubble is good for you.
Well, he's doing okay. He just went 8-0 in the 8-0 in the seeding games.
Yeah, he was trying to hide there. No. The Disney bubbles, like what he did there is so impressive. The Kardashian bubble is just.
I'm all in on Devin Booker right now. I think he's having a great next season. No curse. All right, this just in at the buzzer. Back-to-back MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo tweeting, Disney is making a movie based on my family's story. They are searching for actors to play me and my brother Thanasis in our younger days. No experience necessary. Of course, he wrote, it helps if you resemble the handsome boys pictured below.
Look at that.
And have some basketball experience. Spread the word. Do you have any ideas for casting, Richard?
No, I have zero. I'm leaving this and Disney and Giannis alone, completely alone.
Nick, anything? What do you got for us?
Let Giannis star, Rach. Let Giannis be Giannis
self?
In the Giannis movie.
Would they have to use the CGI?
Yeah, he can do it. They can find a way. It's Disney. He can make it work.
Mm-mm. You know how in the
budget ain't there.
No, you know how in the Marvel movies they went like 20 years difference with the Captain. No, okay, Captain Marvel. That was impressive. They could de-muscle Giannis, and he could play himself. We've reached the paper airplane stage of the show. That means it's time to go. We'll see you tomorrow, though.